Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, Pope Benedict is on the second day of his four-day pilgrimage to Madrid for the World Youth Day celebrations, and we bring you full coverage of this visit, including reports from our correspondent in the Spanish capital. We'll also have interviews with a young Spanish university professor who met the Pope today, and an American priest who will hear confessions from the young people at the World Youth Day event. Pope Benedict had a busy morning on the second day of his visit to Madrid, with a courtesy visit to the Spanish royal family, a meeting with young women religious and lay people, and with young university professors. Our correspondent with the Pope in Madrid is Emma McCarthy, and she sent us this report on his morning activities.
Pope Benedict XVI's second day on Spanish soil began to the sound of pealing bells ringing since early morning from the chapel of the Augustinian monastery housed within the majestic El Escorial complex. The monumental 16th century palace, which lies beneath the hills beyond Madrid, was designed by King Philip II of Spain and houses the library in which the Spanish monarch wanted to gather the works of the greatest thinkers of his time. On Friday, this UNESCO World Heritage site set the stage for Pope Benedict XVI's encounter with young academics and professors, as well as 1,600 young women religious.
En nombre de todas las religiosas aquí presentes, de vida contemplativa y activa.
In the silence of the cloister and our humble service to others, we do all we can to help your mission, a young Spanish nun told the Pope, with a trembling voice that echoed around the enclosed courtyard of Patio de los Reyes.
Le ayudamos con nuestra sencillez y pobreza. Y con la fuerza que recibimos de Jesucristo.
The women, all under 40 years of age, many of them novices, representing a variety of charisms, had welcomed Pope Benedict with an unexpected clamour, particularly considering that there were, among the Benedictines, the Pauline family, the missionaries of charity and the servants of the Divine Master, many from contemplative orders who had received special permission to be present at the encounter.
Frente al relativismo y a la mediocridad surge la necesidad de esta radicalidad.
He told them that in a world of relativism and mediocrity, we need that radicalism to which their consecration as a way of belonging to God, who is loved above all things, bears witness. This, he emphasized, is also more important today when we see a certain eclipse of God taking place. The Pope thanked them for their silent service, for their prayer. Thank you for your generous, total, and perpetual yes to the call of the loved one, he said.
Gracias por esto, sí generoso, total y perpetuo a la llamada del amado.
Then, from the sunny courtyard, he passed beneath a delicately sculpted portal into the shade of St. Lawrence Basilica, where, in stark contrast to the song of the nuns, he was greeted by the tumultuous applause of over 1,000 young academics. The Professor Pope had arrived among his fellow professors. As Pope Benedict made his way up the long central aisle, the men and women drawn from across Spanish universities, Catholic and non-Catholic, precipitated forward to greet him, their colourful academic hats and robes indicating their various faculties. As Pope Benedict moved forward, his delight to be among them was apparent on the broad smile that never left his face.
En nombre de los profesores, aquí reunidos, os damos la más calurosa bienvenida.
Professor of Medieval History at Madrid University, Alejandro Rodríguez de la Peña, spoke to the Pope of how today it's not easy to be a witness to the faith in university circles, and on behalf of his colleagues asked for advice.
Estar entre vosotros, me vienen a la mente mis primeros pasos como profesor en la Universidad de Bonn.
Pope Benedict began by recalling his own first steps as a young professor at the University of Bonn, and then continued that at times today one has the idea that the mission of a university professor is exclusively that of forming competent and efficient professionals to supply the jobs market.
De formar profesionales competentes y eficaces que satisfagan la demanda laboral en cada preciso momento.
Pope Benedict noted that often it is said the only thing that really matters is pure technical ability, a utilitarian approach to education, which, he warned, is becoming more widespread, even at the university level, promoted especially by sectors outside the university.
Sabemos que cuando la sola utilidad y el pragmatismo inmediato se erigen como criterio principal, las pérdidas pueden ser dramáticas.
As professors, Pope Benedict said, we know that when this happens, much is lost, with potentially tragic results. From the abuses associated with the science, which acknowledges no limits beyond itself, to the political totalitarianism which easily arises when one eliminates any higher reference than the mere calculus of power. Instead, the authentic idea of the university is precisely what saves us from this reductionist and curtailed vision of humanity. Herein, said the Pope, lies the vital importance of the professor's mission, the honor and responsibility of transmitting the ideal of the university. This is achieved, he said, not simply by teaching, but by the way professors live and embody their faith, by realizing that truth itself will always lie beyond our grasp, by remaining humble and always keeping our gaze fixed on Christ.
A no olvidar que la enseñanza no es una escueta comunicación de contenidos.
Always remember, he concluded, that teaching is not just about communicating content, but about forming young people. You need to understand and love them, to awaken their innate thirst for truth and their yearning for transcendence. Be for them a source of encouragement and strength. With Pope Benedict in Madrid, I'm Ema McCarthy.
Hundreds of thousands of young people from across the globe have flocked to Madrid for the World Youth Day celebrations with the Pope. 12 lucky young people, whose names were drawn out of a hat, had lunch with Pope Benedict at the Apostolic Nunciature on Friday. The group was chosen from among the thousands of volunteers who have been preparing for the World Youth Day event for many months. The 12 included a young man and woman from every continent, plus a Spanish young man and woman representing the host nation for this 2011 World Youth Day. Later on Friday, Pope Benedict was scheduled to hold a private meeting with the Spanish Prime Minister Rodríguez Zapatero, and then his final engagement of the day was to preside over an evening Way of the Cross celebration with young people in a central square of Madrid. As we heard earlier, Pope Benedict spoke on Friday morning to a group of around 1,000 university professors and teachers in Madrid. Greeting him on behalf of the academics was Alejandro Rodríguez de la Peña, a history professor and vice-rector at CEU San Pablo University in the Spanish capital. He spoke to Ema McCarthy ahead of that meeting with the Pope, and told her that Benedict's visit comes at a very important time in Spain's history, as the country is currently grappling with a severe cultural identity crisis.
Pope Benedict XVI has frequently spoken about what he has described as an educational emergency, particularly referring to the problems of young people today. We've seen a lot of discontent, even in Britain we've seen violence erupting and among young people. Would you agree that there is an educational emergency? Is that your experience?
Indeed, I do agree. I think he has suffered in his own ministry as Pope. He has suffered one example of this educational emergency when he was invited to La Sapienza, to the University of Rome, to give this lecture in La Sapienza in Rome. He was confronted with a very aggressive response on behalf of a group of radical anti-clerical students and professors. And he suffered, he experienced what is to be rejected, what is to be excluded from academia just because you are a Catholic or because you are the Pope. So he knows, he has a first-hand experience of what is to be, so to speak, excluded. So, in my opinion, there is an educational emergency, not only because we have a great problem with young people, as the recent disturbs in England has shown, or in other places. We have a generation gap, we have a problem of values, a problem with education in general, a big problem, I think. But this is a general problem. Forward, we Catholics, or we Christians in general, we have another problem added to the first problem. This problem is that sometimes in some school ambience, in some university, in some universities, if you have a faith that is not hidden, that is not undercover, you will confront your fellow students or your fellow professors, and you will feel isolated or excluded just because of your faith. So, in my opinion, educational emergency has to do with a general generation problem and with young students and young professors' faith problem of public life, a faith to try to be coherent with your faith in academia. And this is related to another problem that this Pope and John Paul II highlighted many times, the problem of faith and reason. You can have a problem in your classroom if you teach or you express your faith, or you are coherent with your faith as teacher or as student, but you can have a problem as well if you write an article or you give a lecture in which you don't accept political correctness regarding faith and reason. I think educational emergency is not only about education, it's as well about science.
No, we've seen a huge change in Spanish society over the last 10 years. We've seen, people call it a secularization, which is true, of course. We cannot in any way doubt that with the current government and the passing of many laws which go strongly against the Catholic faith. Is there still, however, room, space for discussion and debate in Spanish society between people of a secular point of view, between people who have no belief and believers? Is there space for this dialogue, a dialogue that generally starts and flourishes, particularly among the intellectuals of any society? Would you see the space is existing in Spain?
Of course, there should be this space, there should be this debate. Every healthy society has to have this kind of debate between intellectuals, lay intellectuals, Catholic or Christian intellectuals. Is this thing that the Pope has called the discussion in the, I don't know the English word, Gentile atrium, the
courtyard of the Gentiles. Yeah.
This thing is urgent in Spain. We have urgency. But to be very honest with you, in Spain we have a problem of intolerance, intellectual intolerance. I have been a student and a scholar in other universities outside Spain. I have been in Cambridge, I have been in the States, in Holland. And if I compare, I think in Spain the atmosphere is more aggressive. It's less room for the dialogue. Of course, there is dialogue, there will be dialogue. The political aspect of this confrontation, to be sincere, is less hot. I mean, things are getting more calm, less hot, less aggressive. But in the academic, in the media, in intellectual in intellectual ambience, I don't feel like, you know, there is a honest, straightforward debate on faith and reason, on secularization. Spain has secularized as very quickly. I mean, it's a very quick process, a very, you know, accelerated process. I mean, in other European societies, it has taken more time. In Spain, in just 10 years, 15 years, things, even 5 years ago, things that were so consolidated, so clear, so beyond debate in Spain and regarding faiths and politics, faith and science, all is questioned. Everything is questioned now. Even the Pope's visiting now, there is a group of people very, very, very much radicalized that even question the right of the Pope to come here, the very right to come here to speak.
The debate, because in any healthy civil society, there's always a debate, particularly beginning at an academic level, between believers and non-believers, but generally for the construction of a sound society for the common good. We've seen a Spain that has changed enormously, as you said, in 10, 15 years. Is there still space for that debate? Is it something that is missing? Could that be one of the contributing factors to why societies that have become rampantly secularized, such as Spain, seem to be suffering the crisis, not only economic, but also the current crisis, worse than most other societies?
In some degree, the situation in Spain is that we have cultural crisis and identity crisis that it has to do with our national identity. I mean, Spain has been historically a nation that is famous in the world because of its role as a Catholic country. And now Spaniards, since 30, 40 years ago, are we asking ourselves, who are we? Who are we? Are we a Catholic country? If we are a secularized country, we have to look for a new identity, because during around 1,300 years, we have been a very Catholic country. So the process of reconstruction of a national identity that France, for example, initiated 200 years ago with the French Revolution, we are doing it now in a very rude way. I mean, it's not something intellectually, no, it's something very, very poor. It's an intellectual debate with no level at all. No, it's not a high-level intellectual debate. It's just we want to be lay, we want to be secular, we want to be a modern country, identifying modernity with secularization, but very simple. It's nothing complex, nothing that I could intellectually respect. The problem with Spanish culture now is that we have to find an identity that incorporates Catholicism, that is our roots, is our original identity, and combine it with a new modernity that is not aggressive with Catholicism. We cannot build a new Spain against Catholicism. This is to destroy our identity. And what is happening with the new generation is that they are asking themselves, who are we? If I am not Catholic, what I am? This is the main question now. And when I see other debates in other countries, especially in the Anglo-Saxon countries, I think debate is more rich there. I mean, there are even the atheist militants, Dawkins and all the rest. I mean, at least there is a debate, an intellectual debate. They are aggressive as well in the Anglo-Saxon countries, but there is an exchange of ideas. I mean, in Spain, I miss this kind of high-level intellectual debate. But this is only my opinion.
Absolutely. But you're a professor in Madrid University, and your academic studies, and that's something that you share in common with the Pope, at least.
I've made research on intellectual history, but I'm not a philosopher. I'm just a historian. Okay. So I have interest as the Pope wrote his PhD, his philosophy dissertation on Saint Bonaventure, and he was a medieval theologian. I know things about the research, the Ratzinger research on Saint Bonaventure, but to be honest with you, my field of research and his field of research, they are not very close, and they are different fields of research.
What is the message that you will bring to the Pope on behalf of young academics, not only in Spain, but elsewhere?
I would like to bring two messages. The first one is that we say to him that we are so grateful for his teachings, we are so grateful for his wisdom, for his role as not only as a pastor, as a pope, and before as a cardinal prefect, but when he was a professor in Germany, he's an example of how you can be a great professor, a great academic, and be faithful to your faith, to your church. The famous dialogue with Habermas, Jürgen Habermas, is an example of this. And we would like to say to him, we are grateful, we admire you, not only as you, we love you as a vicar of Christ, you are the vicar of Christ, we are here because of this, but you, as Joseph Ratzinger, you are a great intellectual, probably the most important intellectual alive of this age. So we would like to say this. And secondly, we would like to say Catholic professors, Catholic teachers, we have a role to play in the academic world, not only as teachers, as well as scientists. And it should be possible that science and faith go together. We cannot be excluded of academia because we have faith, because we would like to be coherent with our faith. If we want to have free academia, we want to have freedom exchange, freedom in the sense of exchange of ideas, debate, free debate, it has to be acceptable that there are academics that try to make in their research, in their teaching, make perfectly coherent faith and reason. And this is a great battle we have to fight, because in some places this is not accepted. If you say some things, you are excluded from the academia because you have said something that is against political correctness. And this is a problem for us. I would like to speak about it, and of course of our role as, so to speak, bringers of the evangelical truth to our students. If I am not a kind of an apostle, if I cannot be an apostle as teacher, as professor, if I cannot be an apostle, I cannot fulfill my vocation, because I am a Christian and this is for me more important than to be a professor. So I should have freedom to be an apostle in my classroom. And this is another problem we have. To be an apostle and to be a professor. Are these things that have to be separated or no?
That was Professor Rodriguez de la Peña from Madrid's CEU San Pablo University speaking to Emma McCarthy. Saturday morning sees a new development for the World Youth Day event in that Pope Benedict will hear confessions from three young people. It's the first time that the Pope himself has joined the dozens of priests who normally hear confessions from the young pilgrims at the World Youth Day event. Again, the numbers for the three young people in question will be drawn by lot from the army of young volunteers working for the World Youth Day. Father Thomas Vassalotti is a priest from Brooklyn in New York City and will be among those other priests hearing confessions from the World Youth Day pilgrims in a central Madrid park. He spoke to us about the origins of the Sacrament of Reconciliation and explained why it is so important.
First, the biblical level is that when Jesus rose from the dead, he met the bedrock of the faith was the encounter with the resurrected Jesus and the words. He imparts the Holy Spirit. What you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. What are loosed on earth will be loosed in heaven. He says that to the apostles. So that's an enormous part of that binding and unbinding, and that underwrites the authority, the theology imparted to those who knew Jesus, accompanied him whilst he lived. Those disciples who accompanied him and witnessed the resurrection, that they can do that binding and unbinding, and the freeing of sins. And those are the two great promises: freedom from death, we recognize, but also freedom from sin. Second is the big scandal for people in our modern era, would how can God act in this way through a person? As a diocesan priest, I respond to it as follows. I tell people, first of all, that God alone forgives sins. I'm a minister. I'm here to help you. And this reality doesn't happen just inside your head. I've known psychologists also say, we talk about the power of the confessional. And they have people who are Catholic psychologists, but they say when it falls into disuse, people see them more. You know, there's a tremendous power to be liberated, to be free of their sins. And I think young people recognize that. They recognize the power of the forgiveness, the importance of the forgiveness of sins, and they recognize the challenge of the faith. It's another key part of, for me, evangelizing people, is not to be afraid. Not to be afraid to evangelize and to advise people, and also to accept and confront the challenging reality of our faith, which is also speak honestly about original sin. I am a sinner. We are sinners. It may be forgiven, but I'm still struggle with that. So that is something that I think young people see as authentic.
So what would you say if there, for example, is a young person listening to this interview right now, and, you know, they were born a Catholic, baptized, they made the first Holy Communion, they were confirmed in the faith, and then they hit 16, and like the rest of their friends, they decided, oh, this is all just nothing to do with me, nothing to do with my life. Then, of course, perhaps in life they met a particular crisis, a personal crisis, or a crisis of the spirit, and decided, yeah, you know, I think maybe I'd be interested in coming back to the church. I'd be interested in getting closer once again to God. Mm-hmm. A young person who perhaps turned up to World Youth Day in Madrid because they heard it was going on and thought it would be interesting. How would you encourage them to take part in the sacrament of reconciliation?
Well, the first words I say most often are not to be afraid, that the trust in God, the trust God is a God of love, and that, of course, this is a great challenge for all ministers of this sacrament, that we must transmit that. And, of course, people have been away for a while, that, you know, to understand that their ignorance of certain things and not let that be the hang-up. They might say, oh, I don't know the right prayer. So what? Okay, fine. I'll walk you through it. You know, just don't. But you're here. In fact, the fact that they've just come or they're thinking about it. And so I would say, well, do not be afraid. Then is just be honest. Again, that step that I talked about before, being religious, but also being human. And to be human is to be honest, to say, you know, I dropped the ball on something. I know I let people down. I know I did something I shouldn't have done. And that's the Holy Spirit. It's not me, you know, the minister. It's the people who are confronting themselves the truth of Christ.
How difficult is it for you as a minister of the sacrament? It must be one of the most taxing sacraments for priests to perform. And yet you said, I'm looking forward to hearing many confessions. In the priest who has to hear the confession, who is the minister of this sacrament, how difficult, how taxing, what type of experience is it for you? Well, so that people can understand also the other side.
Yeah, from,
you know.
Well, for the priest, I think it's draining. Oftentimes you do hear a lot of difficult stories. So I would say it's something that you have to be well prepared for, rested. You try as best as you can to accompany the people and to love the people there, to help them along the way, to identify with them. I am like them. I understand their struggles. And so treat each person with great respect, to understand there's a lot of history going on with them. And just have, I think, the energy. It's just, I do find it, it can be some of the most memorable, unforgettable moments of my priesthood have been in the confessional, but also it's a draining experience as well, because it does ask a lot personally of a priest.
Is this your first World Youth Day?
No, my first one was in 1993. I went there not as a priest, but as a young person. That was John Paul II in Cherry Creek Park in Denver, Colorado. So that was a great experience for me. And
were you considering the priesthood before that?
I think at that time, maybe not so much. Right at that point, I remember the prayer vigil before the Mass, as with John Paul II. And I remember seeing the Pope on stage, and I broke out in tears. I didn't know where the heck that was from. And I'm generally not a person who is given to publicly breaking down and crying, but I just was so moved by seeing the Pope there and leading us in a prayer vigil in Cherry Creek Park.
That was Father Thomas Vassalotti from New York City, speaking to my colleague, Emma McCarthy. All for today from me, Susie Hodges, here at Vatican Radio's English programme. But we hope you have enjoyed listening to us. We'll be on the air again at the same time tomorrow. And don't forget, you can always find our programmes at the click of a mouse on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. Laudato Jesus Christus.